Welcome to the last thing I saw. Do not expect too much from the end of the world. I saw it at the Locarno, I guess the press screening there was the first time I saw it. And that was like the first film I saw. So already it was a great festival. I've loved your movies and especially this one. Welcome, Rana Jude.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I also appreciate your writing.
So what is it like with the film? You know, now you've screened it in lots of festivals and shown it with lots of audiences, and you've been getting this great responses. What has that been like compared with the very first screening in Locarno?
I'm used to not expect that much from the response towards the film. And actually, this has a lot of reasons. Maybe the fact that I'm not psychologically that strong. And one of the things, one of the solutions I actually found is always to have another one or two projects in advance and focus on those. So when a film is, when one film is out, my mind is somehow let that behind. So I'm focusing on something else. And this is easier for me to accept a bad response or failure or whatever it, you can call it. In this case, I was somehow amazed by the positive response or kind of understanding or appreciation of the film, which came from different corners of the world. Despite the fact that while we were in the production process with the film, myself, but also some of our collaborators used to say, look, the film is very local. So it won't be, nobody would get it and nobody would be interested. This Romania is like an unknown country somewhere at the periphery of Eastern, of civilized Europe, so to speak. So nobody would be interested in that. And the first responses of the film festivals proved that, because the film was rejected at some other festivals, etc., and sometimes very, very directly, very immediately. So it seemed like, oh, it's true, of course. It's just a small local film, and that's it. So I was prepared for that. And then little by little, the responses amazed me. And my only answer or my only explanation is not that it's a great film, because I don't believe that, of course. But I think that somehow, unknowingly, the film touches upon some issues that many people are facing, and not only in Romania, as I thought at some point. So everything related to the way labor is organized, work is organized, to the relation with the internet, with the platforms, with everything. So maybe these things happen in more places than only in our shitty country here, you know.
Totally true. For me, it felt very universal, but also, you know, very specific. And I was curious how you built up the elements of the movie, because part of what I love about it is that it does have this rich texture of like being in the horrible modern, you know, over-industrialized world. And that comes from having like a lot of elements in the movie. So I was kind of wondering, what were the first elements in the movie? I mean, was the starting point the character of this young, you know, overworked production assistant? Was that like the first element, or?
It's difficult to say, because like in the case of all my projects, in a way, they are much older. I try to make as many films as possible, but and this might give the feeling that it's a new project and a new project and a new project. But actually, all these projects I do are years old, and I try to work on them and in parallel, and at some point one of them becomes more ripe in a way. And in all these cases, the shape or the focus on the of the project changes all the time. So it's not that simple to answer you specifically, but in this case, maybe it's easier, because it was none of what you said. But I think at the beginning was my desire to make a film regarding some of the things I experienced or noticed or witnessed when I was young and starting in a industry, as you call it, which was in Romania, like a few years after the 1989 revolution. I was very young and I started doing low jobs, as they are called, for foreign productions, but also for Romanian televisions, for everything I could make a living out of. And I didn't observe those at that age, because it seemed to me that this is what it is and this is the only thing the things can be. But then looking back after 10, 15 years, everything seems all of a sudden, oh my God, how it was possible to work, I don't know, in productions of 48 hours continuously. And then we were shipped in cars from 400 kilometers away to, and many people I encounter, many people becoming very sick out of this, physically sick out of this regime of working. Some had fatal car crashes. Like, this was one of the memories that inspired the character of Angela. Again and again, all these things that are stories somehow forgotten, let's say, by the big history, but which in a way I felt that they should be remembered and offered in a certain form for the nowadays audience, because for me they encapsulated essence of our, or a part of our working life and living the life in this post-totalitarian society, which embraced after the terrible and brutal dictatorship a kind of neoliberal regime with no social protection. And whenever something was going wrong, people said, yeah, it's going wrong because we had this legacy of dictatorship. But when we have fully a neoliberal society, things will be good. So I think we have it nowadays, and we discover that in at least for some huge categories of people, and for many, many aspects of our lives, is not so. So you felt tricked in a certain way.
I was just thinking about what you're saying just now because, thinking about how when I was watching, I don't know, like the death of Lazarescu, I'm watching it through these naive eyes where I'm like, oh, that's because of the legacy. But now,
Well, I would say that many things are the legacy of the communist regime and the dictatorship, and especially, I don't know, the brutality of interactions between people, the lack of confidence, the this I think comes and probably takes a lot of years to. But on the other hand, I think it's ridiculous that, okay, after 5 years, after 10 years, you can say that, but now it's 33 years and people still you hear that. So how long, how many hundreds of years should go so you can say no, it's not only that. It's like we all know here at least that Ceausescu's regime destroyed a huge number of historical monuments and historical buildings in Bucharest, and not only in Bucharest. And people are justifyingly hating him and his dictatorship also for this. And then you discover that in the years after the 1989 revolution, much more historical building and monuments were destroyed because of the corrupted governments and greedy investors who managed to put down a lot of them in order to erect, I don't know, big office buildings and these kind of things. So then you put the things into a balance, and no way to say dictatorship was better or something like that. But the question is, of course, you could blame the dictatorship back then, but now who's doing that? It's a bit troubling, you know.
I also want to ask about the filmmaking too. It's one thing, to think about these ideas and the history, but what's amazing is how you're able to convey it with the particular scenes and sequences and what you added together. Maybe can we talk about the car scenes? Because I feel like this is the kind of pulse of the film, a kind of caffeinated, high caffeine heartbeat of the film. What was it like shooting those scenes with Angela? And you're there in the back seat, or you're in there with her, I assume.
Well, actually, Ilinka Manolaki is a great actress, in my opinion, and I think even more a great driver. She's driving a lot in the city. She's really a extremely skilled driver. So things were rather easy because of her, actually, because she managed in some cases, with having the camera on the side and the sound equipment, to very smoothly just drive through this jungle, which is the Bucharest traffic. So actually, I would say it was very easy. That was, I realized only after that, oh my God, how it would have been with someone else. You see, so we were very lucky with him.
That's worth mentioning too, because most of the time you see cars in movies, they're actually just like bolted down.
And also, there's something interesting about the risk and hazards. I have the feeling that the reckless driving is so horrible that we are somehow protected because of the traffic jams. I think that when the city is freer, then it's much more dangerous, you know. It's paradoxically, I feel safer to walk on the sidewalk or to bike. I don't anymore, but I used to bike. And when it's a long traffic jam, then the cars go slow, so they cannot really kill you. But whenever there's a free road, it's madness, you
This is the
know.
silver lining to the horrible traffic problem. But I also just love that it becomes a kind of portrait. It's like a modern portraiture that you have, that you stick with this profile shot of her. And it's always like really eloquent and interesting just to watch her.
Yes, I think it's also that it's very cinematic in a way, I hope, because you have this background that always goes. And then I don't know, I didn't know how to film it exactly. And maybe it's the influence of Warhol cinema, whom I like a lot. And many of his films are kind of portraits in a way, not only his screen tests, but also other films. So, and Warhol for me is a big influence in this film. Maybe not so much visible, but is there all the time, especially in the acceptance of accidents and acceptance whatever comes. I didn't go that far as him, of course, but the study of his work as much as I could have made it, because the only way to do it was to pirate the films which are online, and it's not his work or his work, and to read the books and the catalogue raisonné of the films and all these things that you can find. So I studied Warhol, and I think it's very important for me and for this film in particular.
Yeah. You know, especially since this movie feels so much like a documentary about being this kind of worker, and especially about being a young woman in the world and all the misogyny you're encountering. Were you able to have like input from Ilinka, from, you know, her own experience at all, or?
Well, yes, of course, it was a collaborative, up to a point at least, collaborative process. But you know, actually, I realized that I don't have stories with Ilinka, because the process was so smooth, and she's so serious and so easygoing in a way, and she loves what she's doing. And I believe what Bresson says in his book about in his notes on cinema, that he calls model the actors, because they were non-professional and they were like in painting, you know. But he says a model should not act a character, but should not act himself or herself either. A model should act nobody. And somehow I believe that. So it was the character, if we can speak of a character, is a meeting between my direction and a little bit of my conception of that, her personality, her body, her voice, etc., and the storytelling, the script, the film itself. So it's created by all that. It's difficult to talk about it, because if I would talk about, I would only talk about one aspect and let the other go away.
No, definitely. I mean, in what you write, you know, you write so many stories and references. It's just such a rich texture to the screenplay that they're working with. And I just love how you also have quotes, you know, on either end of the film. I mean, for example, like Yosa Busan, the Japanese poet.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what got you into that poet?
Well, difficult to say, because I collect these kind of things and I'm open to them all the time. And I need, maybe this is a kind of weakness that I tell about, that sometimes people say, think with your own mind. And I feel a kind of dread when people say that, because I realize that everything in our life, in a way, if we're honest, or at least me, I don't speak about others, is that I learned from others in a way. So I don't know if I ever had with my own mind one single idea. And I heard that, you know, it was all the time the mantra of anti-vaccine people in the pandemic time, saying, think with your own mind. And they said, well, how could I? I mean, I'm not a biologist, I'm not a specialist in vaccine. So it's impossible to think with my own mind about everything, you know. So in a way, I need other minds to be able to have a little bit of activity for myself. So this is why I need all the time to collect things, to use other things. And of course, putting them into a collage, into a patchwork, creates maybe something which is a little bit new. But I need those, and I don't refrain from that. At some point, I met people, or writer for cinema, or writer directors, who refused any kind of quotation, saying, no, I want to invent my own dialogue. But I think here Godard gave the definite answer when he was accused for his film from 1990, Nouvelle Vague, with Alain Delon, and all the text is quotations. That's a very funny film because you can see Alain Delon saying very philosophical quotes, and you can see in his eyes he doesn't understand anything of what he's saying. And Godard said, when he was accused of using the quotation, said, why should I have made the dialogues myself? Because I didn't invent the trees I'm shooting. I didn't invent the grass. I didn't invent the cars or the houses or the people in front of the camera. Why should I have invented the lines? So I think that's a definite answer.
That's terrific. I'm going to have to steal that. And I mean that extends in your film to the use of another movie, another film. You have a conversation with Angela Moves On, and I was wondering when was the first time you saw this other film, which is about basically like a taxi driver from early 80s.
Oh, first time, I don't remember. I saw it many, many years ago on TV and I disliked it profoundly. And at some point during the pandemic, I saw it again and liked it a little bit more. And then I put a note in my diary of work, so to speak, saying I would like one day to make a kind of remake nowadays of this film. And this idea stuck to my head. And at some point, I realized that unconsciously I was doing that, writing this other script with Angela, with the modern, she had another name. So in that moment, I realized I can combine the two. And watching it again, the third time, the film, I realized it's much better than I thought, actually. And maybe, I don't know, maybe this is what the psychologists say, is that if you get used with another person or another object, you start liking it more. So that's the secret of relationships. I don't know, and I like the film much more. And then I started to look at it more carefully and discover that it's full of subversive elements towards the regime when it was made, because it's made in the communist dictatorship times under heavy censorship. So then I said, well, maybe I should search for other films with women driver from that era, but this is the only one. And then little by little, the idea came. Actually, it was also another idea I had before, an inspiration from a Soderbergh movie called The Limey, if you know this film.
I love it.
It's a great Soderbergh film, right? And I remember that I saw it many years ago, but I was really, really impressed by his idea to create a flashback of the character who's played by Terence Stamp, and using Poor Cow by Ken Loach, where Stamp was the lead, as the flashback of the character. So I always wanted to do something like that. So now I had the opportunity, and when I had this idea, I said, well, I would do one step more, maybe to include much more pieces from that film, to make it like a shot reverse shot, but the reverse shot is always from another place, from another time, another representation more.
And then you also include the actress, right? Doreen Lazar, and she's a character in your film. I mean, what was her reaction to your asking her to be in this new film? And also, has she seen the whole of your film? Like, what did she think of it?
Dorina Lazar is a great theater and film actress. She's still working in theater. She's very active. And she knew my films somehow. And when I met her, and I knew that definitely I want her to play the part, because otherwise it wouldn't have made any sense. She said, yes, I'm coming, but give me the full script, because I gave her only her scenes. And I said, yes, I will, of course, I will give it to you. And she said, yes, give it to me, because I want to be sure there's no profanity or vulgar things in the movie. And then I had 2 seconds of hesitation, saying, what am I going to do now? So then I decided to lie to her very cowardly. So I said, don't worry, there's no vulgarity in this movie, I assure you. And she said, do you promise me? I said, yeah, don't worry, but the rest is going to be improvised anyway. So then we shot the film, and she was absolutely okay with that. But then she went at the premiere, and she phoned me after that, and said, what have you done to me? She said that she was very furious at the beginning, after the film ended. But then, and well, this is the maybe that's why they are actors. She received so many messages of people congratulating her of that. that she mellowed, and now she's very happy. She's even nominated for the National Film Awards for the small part, so to speak.
That's amazing. Well, success will change people's minds sometimes.
Yes, it's true. But then we had a long discussion, and actually she said, "Okay, I understand that actually this vulgarity, this profanity is part of the society, is not something that you want to endorse in a way." So I said, "Yes, no, it's okay." And I think now she's okay.
The final sequence of the film, which is, almost like a film in itself alone, this kind of very long take, just a really great frame, like a silent movie frame with a lot of stuff going on. And I was curious, like, how many times did you film this shot? Like, how many takes did you do in terms of arranging? And did everyone know how long it would be?
I guess so, yes. And actually, it was at some point at the end, I was very, very unhappy with this scene because I think it has a lot of problems if you look at it. Because on one hand, all of a sudden the narrator changes, so to speak, and you see it through the lens of the camera of this commercial ad being made. And my idea was that maybe this is a good thing because you can it's a very didactic, but why not? So you can see in the same time what it is and what it could be, and it's not. So then it's like it's going on and on in real time. But of course, a shooting like that would be much longer normally. So this real time is somehow a compressed real time. So it's a bit of a trick, which I was not very happy with. But then actually, there's another thing that appear is because of the framing, and I will get to that. It's a bit naturalistic because it's like a documentary, but in the same time it's very staged. So in the end I felt so there's many contradictions in this part if you look carefully, and I was not happy with that. But then I realized that actually I like it that you if you look at from another angle you can see this struggle, that the result is the struggle of the author to somehow make something from that. And maybe it has a kind of tension or an intellectual tension or artistic tension, I don't know how to say it. And then I really consider it a kind of essayistic in terms of space, because it's really like a kind of small essay, of course, we can put quotes about the space of Bucharest today, because you have this building from the 1930s in the left hand of the shot, and then a kind of communist style building in the back, and the Nouveau Riche Villa in the lower back, and on the right, bunker, which is really a bunker, which was in the courtyard of this factory. So I said, well, all this coming together communicates something. So I just wanted to have this shot. So yeah, so it was all these layers coming together and going one against another, which made that scene in this way.
So one more question. I just wanted to ask you about, you really have been able to get the texture of internet in our world, whether that's Bobita or the way Zoom is a part of work life and how it can feel really absurd. And it's some reviewer used the term the rubbishness of modern life or something like that. I think the first person that she auditions, right when you're hearing about what happened to him, he starts like floating in the Zoom. And it's just so awful because you're hearing about the worst things and this is happening. If you could talk a bit about capturing that about our world, I don't know.
What can I say? I think it's something that a kind of I hope you ask me about what I'm doing, so you never know what you're doing. You just have some vague ideas. What I'm hoping is the fact that I have made some films related to history before. And from the research about those films and from the making of them, at least one thing stayed with me, which is this paying attention to all details from a historical perspective. Then moving to my last two feature films, which are, let's say, contemporary stories. After all, because I've made like five or six features on documentaries regarding history, so it's quite a lot and in a quite short time, like 5, 6 years. I have this interest in focusing on the nowadays elements of society, like they are already going away, like they are already on the verge of disappearing, which actually they are all the time. So it's a desire to capture these surfaces of the realities of today as best as I can, and using the camera and using montage as a tool. And then, of course, the internet space is one of the most mysterious philosophically, I think, today, because it's a kind of non-space, but still we are there. And so in a way, it's also the cinema is like that, you know. So yeah, so I try to capture those textures, as you say, of the internet, or not necessarily on the internet, of the internet, of the interaction between us using these apps, these tools. And putting them, and not making from this the kind of subject or topic of the story, but just I don't know, kind of a background.
Yeah, definitely. And now for the final question, what was the last thing you saw in any form, home or in the cinema or wherever?
Oh, last evening I saw a film called Chicago Calling. Do you know this?
No, wait, what's that one?
It's a noir film from 1951. It's really good. It's set on Bunker Hill in Los Angeles, which I never know, I never went there, but I know this Bunker Hill because of Tom Anderson, Los Angeles Plays itself. So somehow I don't remember when I read something about it. So I pirated it from the internet, and last evening I saw it, and it's the story of a father who doesn't have a phone and needs a phone to find something about the operation of his kid. So it's very related to economics, but it's shot a lot in this Bunker Hill area before it was changed forever, as Tom Anderson showed us in his movie. It really has a lot of cine verite thing. It's quite modern from 1951. I can send it to you if you want.
I would love that.
I didn't find it at a very good technical quality, but it's okay to watch it on a computer screen.
Yeah. I always meant to track down. Is it in the Tom Anderson movie? Does it mention in it or
No, it's
it's
not.
not? It's just okay.
No, looked. I thought it is, but it's not actually. Yeah, I checked that.
Well, now you need to make a sequel. All right. Well, I guess we can.
And I also watched
Oh, what else?
the piece with Donald Trump saying it's going to be a bloodbath if I'm not elected on Instagram.
Yeah. Well, I did want to ask. I was thinking of asking, what was the last TikTok you saw, or what was the last whatever you saw? But yeah, I mean that's definitely.
Yeah. But did you see Trump using these filters for mocking Biden?
No, I haven't. I have to watch
Oh,
that.
you haven't. Yeah, I think it's insane completely. But let me see if I find it fast.
He's the real Bobita, right? He's the
Absolutely, absolutely. It was completely, you know, he put himself on himself or on Biden's face, some things, Snapchat. It's in a way hilarious, but it's unbelievable that someone who on this level.
Yeah, this is the person we're gonna supposed to trust to run the country.
I don't find it now, but I'm gonna look for it and send it to you.
Okay, it's crazy.
Yeah,
Okay.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I will watch that so I can be up to date on the end of the world
Yeah.
as it's in progress now. Thank you, Roddy, so much. Do not expect too much from the end of the world. I guess by the time this posts, it'll be out, so everyone should watch it. Thank you again.
Thank you so much. Hope to meet again or to meet for real.
Yes.
You've been listening to The Last Thing I Saw with host Nicholas Rapold. You can support the podcast by signing up at rapold.substack.com. Thank you for listening.